you're going to overlay the old pattern with a new pattern, but that old pattern is still in there. And that is something that I've had to change my recommendation for most people. Now, not all people. There are some people who say, you know, this is the horse of my dreams, and I'm going to commit to my my study and advance my skills. And, you know, you can do that. I've done that. I've done that myself. I have a little pinto horse, you know, that bucked when I first got her. Now I went for several years. She never bucked. Everything was good. I mean, everything was solid. But then I leased her to a very dear friend who I knew her skill set would match well with this little horse. Well, it turned out her daughter needed a horse, and her daughter ended up getting bucked off of this horse. And, you know, then I think back to, gosh, you know, that horse back when I first got her. So, you know, to me, it's not, it's, you have to answer that for yourself. Is that the risk that you want to take? Is that the path that you want to take with horses? And I, like I said, I've started to say many people in this scenario, and I'm your biggest cheerleader, and, you know, I help you every time I can come to your area and do a clinic, and people get the videos, and they're, you know, great studies, and everything's going really solid. And then what tends to happen to people, in just my observation, is that they get to a point where they go, okay, we're good. We're done. The horse is fixed. And that's not the case. And it's something that a horse that has a very deeply ingrained pattern of behavior, you need to keep striving to be on top of your, improving your ability. I was going to say on top of your game, but it's not really that. It's to continuously improve and hone your skills more and more and more and more and more. If you think of what, you know, people do in any kind of athletics, if they're striving to do something, you know, fairly advanced, say, I want to go to national level or international level or Olympic level, you know, they're never done. Somebody that studies music, they're never done. If that's a craft, if that's something that's important to them, they're never done improving their skills. Like dance, you just told me a great example right there, Melinda, is that, you know, you have this passion for dance and you just learned some new dances in a very unexpected scenario. And, you know, if you don't dance well, you know, nobody gets hurt or killed. If somebody doesn't do well in their athletic world, nobody gets, well, they might get hurt or killed. You know, even race car drivers are doing things to keep their skills honed all the time, all the time, all the time, even in the off season. And yes, it is a life and death kind of scenario driving race cars, but still the cars don't all of a sudden decide that they want to go with the other cars. See, you're still dealing with a living, breathing, thinking, feeling creature that weighs 1,200 pounds average and can get a thought in its mind that we don't understand or expect, and now you're way up in the air, and a pattern of bucking is designed to get a predator off their back immediately. It's a long journey, and this is a real truthful response to this. And like I said, I used to answer it differently and say, oh, yeah, you can do it and on the ground and this kind of thing. But I'll tell you what, I'm at a point that I look at it honestly and say, you know what, nothing is worth risking human life. Nothing. So what I would do is take a horse like that and find other interests. You enjoy doing things on the ground. There's competitions and things for people that go and do things on the ground. They never ride the horse. The horse may be okay going into other activities such as driving or something like that if the association is weight on their back. There's a possibility that the horse has something wrong in the physiology. You may want a chiropractor or veterinarian to do an evaluation of the horse. It could be something with the saddle. It could be behavioral. It could be many, many things. And then my recommendation, if you say, you know, I really want to ride this horse, this is my goal, then I would recommend with that level of pattern of behavior, committing to I was going to start with 6 months, but I'll say 8 to 12 months with a professional. A professional, not you putting your precious self on the back of the horse. And that's somebody who understands the expanse of the psychology of horses, how to read pattern and behavior, but still, no matter how solid it gets, it's reflective of your skill and ability to be able to do that as well. So it's not like, oh, I'll send the horse to the trainer and the horse will fix it. It's like the little horse I gave you an example of. Under certain conditions, all of a sudden that horse bucked off a little girl, and I felt horrible. But I didn't even think of saving anything. It had been, I don't know, 12, 15 years. But that pattern of behavior in that scenario, that horse has that option and will access that response to a given situation. And that's where, even in my evaluation of leasing that horse to my friend, who I knew her ability wasn't likely to trigger that, the horse went on into a different scenario, you know, where it did. So I'll give you one last example, and I think it'll best illustrate my opinion on this, my personal opinion on this. I'm looking for another dog. I've evaluated many breeds. I've looked and searched through rescues. Now, I don't want everybody to send me a lot of emails about, you know, wonderful dogs. This is a very personal thing for me, and I'll take 12 months to do that, to find that ideal dog. And I thought I found the ideal dog. It's a rescue dog. It was a breed that I really feel would be appropriate for where I'm at in my life and what I'm doing and this kind of thing. Found the dog, was prepared to ship the dog across the country, you know, to give it a good home and a good life and all these things. And when I finally got the rescue organization on the line, and online the dog looks fantastic, and they're really on it, very good rescue organization, as many of them are. I really want to compliment them for their heartfelt effort. But one of the things they said is that, you know, not the dog's fault, but the dog was in a bad scenario and had developed the pattern of behavior that when it wanted something, it would put its mouth on you. Now, it hadn't bitten anybody in the beginning, but that became the dog's pattern of behavior to get what it wanted. And I was concerned about that. And then they said it, and then they said, then the dog did nip somebody. And then the people realized, well, you know, they had no business having the dog. They're not good with dogs. The dog has this behavior, and it goes to the rescue. So now it's in the rescue. It's gone to 30 days of training. The dog hasn't bit anybody, hasn't nipped anybody. The person that did the rehabilitation of the behavior is very good, very strong leadership. The dog's fantastic, very smart, very intelligent. Then the dog goes to another person, a foster person, who's not quite as strong of a leader, and nipped her. And right there, when I heard that, I said, it just stopped the whole process right there. Because the dog that has a pattern of behavior, whether it's in their nature or the environment or those kinds of things, given that scenario and that situation, that dog will access that behavior in a future situation. So because my scenario is I can't control all the situations the dog would be in. It would be in the general public. There would be children. There would be, you know, different scenarios. You know, my goal is not to have the type of dog or the behavior in a dog that I'd have to handle and keep away from everybody. That's not the best life for this dog. There would be a better scenario, you know, for that dog. So, you know, when dogs have that kind of behavior in agricultural, historically in agricultural, and my dad told me this as a young girl growing up on the farm. He shared a lot of insights and information, you know, growing up on the farm. There was a farm dog that went to bite a child. He said that dog was taken out immediately, taken behind the barn. There's no dog rescues out there, but that dog was put down because my dad really emphasized to me that human life is not secondary to the animal. And I think that sometimes we get a little out of bounds. And believe me, nobody loves dogs and horses and animals more than me. I mean, at one point we had, you know, lots of animals. I'd probably be on a show for animal hoarding, you know, by today's standards. But, you know, I love having animals. But the behavior of the animal, unless you're a professional or you're willing to put, you know, so many years, you know, into this animal to shape the behavior, and then always knowing that that behavior will be accessed, not because it's the animal's fault, it's simply a behavior that's been instilled in the animal. You're dealing with a lot of risk there, and I just, you know, have to say that honestly, because what a horse with a behavior like that really needs is not what most people are truly willing to do. And I don't know how else better to say that. But if I say, oh, yeah, go on, yeah, we can help, get my videos, that kind of thing, you know, you can do that, and it will help, and, you know, it will improve, but you will be dealing with this behavior for the life of the animal for the time that you had it, not to mention having it go on to somebody else. So, you know, there are times when people who are my colleagues, we will talk about horses, especially the behavior of bucking. You're lucky in one way because you have a predictable behavior when it's going to do it. The one that's very challenging is when a horse does not give any indication. There's no scenario. I mean, you know, when you sit on the horse, it's going to fly into bucking until you get off. The horse that doesn't give you any indication is probably that much more challenging. And my very dear friend Dan Moyer had a colt in here this last year that he put quite a bit of time on, good-looking colt, well-bred. I mean, just knock your socks off. But that horse had that behavior of bucking with no real indication of when it's coming. And here's a man who has cowboyed, has high level of skill, and I mean, kind of, he has more experience and brains and timing, I mean, everything. And he said, you know what, I can't risk getting hurt. And that was just the truth of it. And he said, I'm really sorry to say this, but this horse needs to go back to where it came from, because he said, I just can't be in a situation where I need that horse to be solid, and all of a sudden that pattern of behavior comes out and comes up. And he said, he doesn't just buck to, you know, to just, you know, crow hop around a little bit. He's a little fresh, or cold back is a common term. He said, this horse will not quit until you're off. And that's what it sounds like with this horse. So, you know, there are horses used and sold as companion horses. That horse might be ideal for that. It'd be a companion horse to a horse that's by itself. That may be a good option for it as well. So I hate to say that, but it's really the honest truth. And I feel good about, you know, saying it the way it is, because I want to be compassionate to your situation and compassionate to the horse. And it's in my opinion, at this stage, it's the most compassionate thing that I can say.
Okay. All right. Well, Catherine, we appreciate you submitting that in, and good luck with your decision there. And Karen, we'll go ahead and move on to the next question here.
Man, you guys are starting out with some tough questions here, I'll tell you.
Yeah. Okay. This one's from Brooke. And she says, Karen, I live in Phoenix, and I'm really interested in your natural approach. I would like to take lessons. Do you also teach children? My daughter is 7 and has been riding off and on since she was 4. Thank you, Brooke.
You know, I don't give lessons because what I find is most people, they can come to a clinic or get the videos and really get started with it. You really get started with it. So my time, usually when I give lessons, it's under very specific conditions. The person is in danger. There's a dangerous behavior, you know, something like that, that it's kind of beyond the general clinic scenario or, you know, video, you know, kind of a thing. But I think what you'll find with children, I'm going to answer this question from the children's perspective. Number one thing for kids with horses is have fun. Just let them have fun. You know, a lot of times, you know, people come out, and I've done some kids workshops and 4-H groups and things like that. And the best way I find to teach children is to give them little games that then challenge and little tasks and create little fun little competitions. And it's interesting because I did a workshop, actually it was outside of Phoenix in Levine area years ago, I did a wonderful workshop. The kids had a ball. We did all kinds of creative challenges and this kind of thing. And how kids learn is through play. Now, as we become adults, it's funny because somehow our brain changes and they say, well, you know, I need structure, I need regiments, I need, you know, lesson plan, I need all these kinds of things. But for child, you know, children go out and play on a playground. Adults go to yoga class, you know, or aerobics class. You know, if we went out and played with the kids and hung from the monkey bars, you know, and we would do all the same things as a yoga class would do, but we don't do that anymore. And so we tend not to think, you know, without structure that we're not, you know, learning those kinds of things. So what I would recommend doing is having you and your daughter watch the DVDs and then go out and practice some things and then challenge and say, ooh, can I race you? Ooh, can I do this? Can I do that? You know, make it an interesting little game. But sometimes, and you don't have to look very far to find people, and I don't know why this is, but we'll take something fun and turn it into not very fun. You know, we'll go out and go, well, we have to do this and have to do that. You know, mine was piano. I enjoyed playing piano when I was little, and boy, the lessons made it pretty miserable, unfortunately. You know, I should probably go back and start over with piano again because it's something that I really enjoy, but, you know, I still have a fear of metronomes. So when you're interacting, think of it as an interaction with horses and an interaction with children, that let's go and have an interaction and a challenge and do some fun things and see if you can get your kids to do, you know, lots of different things. Now, and it's interesting, too, when you put on the DVDs, and Melinda, you found this with your granddaughter, and you thought, oh, she's not going to sit and watch, you know, this entire DVD. And kids watch it. You know, my niece enjoys watching my DVDs. You know, I think there's a horse on it, they're interested, and it seems like, okay, maybe it's talking, you know, to a bug or things like that. But, you know, as you already know, as we all know, kids are such sponges. You know, they take things in and, you know, we just don't even know how they pick up on those kinds of things. But like your granddaughter has watched the DVDs how many times, Melinda?
Oh, my gosh. We're beyond counting, I think. So, but I'm
Melinda's husband. Whenever I see him, he looks at me. He has this look like, I watch you on TV all the time. I'm tired.
Again. And again.
Yeah. So if you have kids, you know, whatever age that is, even if it's something, you know, like maybe they're teenagers and don't seem so interested, just put it on. Just put it on in the background. You be watching it, or you be, you know, doing something around the house while it's playing. And you might be surprised that, you know, the things that they just picked up on, even though they may not be fully engaged, but you may be surprised they might, you know, become more fully engaged. Here's another fun thing to do with kids. Have your kids make up the game and challenge you, you know. And that's what's really fun. It can be things on the ground. It can be things on the horse's back. You know, have them make up the challenges and the games and come up with some new things. There's all kinds of fun books of games on horseback and, you know, things like that. I think the best thing you can do with children learning any skill, whether it's piano or horses or school or anything, make it engaging and interesting and fun. So that's really my suggestion to do that. And I really enjoy it so much. Like when Melinda calls and tells me her granddaughter's been watching my videos and what she's doing with her horse and all kinds of things like that. So, that's what I'd recommend, you know, for having kids, you know, being more engaged with your horse.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks, Karen, and thanks for submitting that question. So we'll go ahead and move on here to Shiloh's question. She says she has an off-track thoroughbred mare who has turned out to be a wonderful except for two things. Her biggest problem is that she pulls back when tied to a post or a horse trailer or even in the trailer. I bought a $30 tie ring, and it works if she pulls back, but sometimes she'll just walk off, and the lead rope just slips right out, and off she goes. My aunt went to one of your clinics here in Tucson, Arizona at the beginning of the year and said you were wonderful and really liked your techniques. What should I do to correct this problem, or do you have a DVD specifically for this issue? And then I'll go into her second problem because it's actually, we're going to tie that one into the next question. But her second one, Karen, is her second problem is trailer loading. Sometimes she walks in with a little bit of trouble, and other times it can take more than an hour to get her in. I pretty much can take her anywhere myself because of these problems. I can't take her anywhere. So if you'll go ahead and address the first question, then we'll get the second one along with another question.
Yeah. Well, they're kind of tied in together, you know, as behaviors do. And the trailer loading DVD, I cannot recommend more. I mean, you know, when people see the approach and they see what to do, it's really spelled out in such a way and in different segments that you'll go out and expand your leadership. The horse will have more understanding. You know, I talk about three stages. You know, the horse needs to be able to understand us in order to respect us, in order to respond to us. So what you're asking for in the trail loading is a response, that when you approach the trailer, the horse willingly and confidently walks in quietly, tie it up, you know, close the door, calls out. When you go out, open the door, the horse waits, horse backs out quietly when you ask. Those kinds of things. So having the horse being able to understand, respect, and respond to us, the understanding piece comes first. So right now the horse doesn't understand a couple of things. Now I'm going to switch into the pulling back. Pulling back is a natural response for prey animals when they feel steady pressure. They tend to try to push through it rather than yield to it. So if you think about it with horses or prey animals, there's not much that physically touches their body. You know, it's not like puppies, they sleep in a big puppy pile, and, you know, kitties grow up in a little, you know, box with the mother, you know, and things like that. They don't have much physical contact. So physical contact is actually very foreign to a prey animal. In fact, when they feel physical contact, that immobilizes their body. It triggers their survival mechanism of pushing through that pressure. So when a horse is haltered for the first time, you know, little foal or whatever it is, you know, they call it halter breaking. I mean, if you think about the word halter breaking, I mean, there's a reason that it's called that, because there's a lot of halters that get broke. But if somebody understands how to help a horse understand that pressure isn't something they need to react to in the survival, access a survival mechanism, but to simply yield and find comfort by moving away from it. That is something that we can develop the skill and ability to do that in order for that horse to find the first piece, which is to understand us. So what I would recommend on the trailer loading is get the trailer loading DVD and but just take it through step by step. I've had so many people say, I've had trailer loading problems for years. This horse, you know, we've done everything, and you hear all the stories of, you know, broomsticks and this and ropes and, you know, all kinds of things, and never really resolving, you know, the problem. So that trailer loading DVD really gets to the heart of the issue, you know, for the horse to understand what it is. Now, tying in the trailer and tying in general is another aspect to that, because what the scenario right there is that whether you're tying the horse or asking the horse to go in the trailer, you're taking away that horse's number one survival mechanism, which is flight. So if we think about it from a horse's perspective, a horse says, hey, I've got to be able to, you know, get out of here in case something goes wrong. So even though you may not be threatening or, you know, something really bad immediately, to just take away that ability for flight, for survival, will cause a horse distress and cause them to pull back, push through, run over. You know, a horse, being a prey animal, will kill itself trying to save its own life. You know, if you think about that, it will kill itself trying to save its own life. So in order to, again, repattern that behavior, the trail loading DVD takes it through those stages. I just march right through it. I've had people say they've had the trail loading problem for years, and in one day with that trail loading DVD, having their boards confidently, going in, staying in, coming out. You know, they and the horse both understand what to do. The pullback problem is, you know, similar but different. And I'm happy to announce that there is a brand new DVD that I haven't even announced yet, but it is packaged in the wrapper and ready to go. There are six new, brand new DVDs in a problem-solving series called Fix It Today. And the reason I named it that is, you know, most people go along and everything's pretty good, but there's that one thing, whether the horse pulls back or is needle shy or, you know, things like that. And what we tend to do is we tend to work around those behaviors. We don't hard tie the horse, or we got to get, you know, the neighbor's stock trailer so the horse will get in and the horse has to be hauled with three other horses, or you load the other horses in first and then take the horses out. I mean, there's all kinds of, you know, configurations and adaptations and adjustments that we tend to make. But if people knew what to do, I was talking to a person years ago, a colleague in the industry, and I said, you know, I find when people know what to do, they can take a problem, even as serious as trailer loading and, you know, needle shy and pulling back and things like that, and in one day make a, they can, you know, fix it in a day. And the person said to me, he said, well, Karen, how long, honestly, like trailer loading or needle shy or, you know, these kind of things, you know, how long would it take you? And I said, you know, I mean, depending on the individual, but generally speaking, you know, 30 minutes to a couple of hours, you know, kind of thing. And I do trailer loading demonstrations at expos. I do needle shy demonstrations, pulling back demonstrations. Generally speaking, it takes, you know, that kind of a chunk of time. But that's at my level and ability. I haven't been studying this very long, only about, you know, 22 years now. You know, relative to my grand scheme of things, that's not very long. But I've had intensive, extensive study in this. But the average person doesn't have necessarily that background in that study. So, you know, he said, well, you should say fix it in an hour. He said, well, I don't know that that's realistic, but I think if somebody really went out there and took the time and wasn't in a rush and that kind of thing and really studied the video and really tried, most people can fix a lot of these problems in a day. And, you know, you'd be happy for that. If I said to you, you know, if you study this, these DVDs and that kind of thing, you know, in a week, what about in a week? Those problems are, you know, you have a new behavior patterning over an old behavior. And it, the old behavior, like I said with the horse that bucked, that old behavior will always be there. But you're different. You're different. So when my horse does something or I see an old pattern start to emerge, I can respond. I can say, oop, okay, now I know what to do. But that's the kind of thing to understand with horse behavior is that we're reshaping that horse's behavior, but it can still come up. It's still in there. It doesn't ever go away. It's still in there, but you know what to do, you know, when that happens. So pullback horses, one of the most difficult ones, the most extensive ones that I spent really a lot of time with, that horse, when I got done, that horse that people have reported to me every time I see him, every year or 2 years, and they said, you know, she's not pulled back, not one time. And that horse ran backwards so far, she pulled the 22-foot line. She was going backwards into a big saguaro cactus. I, you know, happened to catch the rope as it released completely and went with her. And I mean, that's where it started. I mean, she was very committed to that pattern of going back. They had never been able to tire hard in her whole life. So, you know, it's possible. Those things are absolutely possible. But people don't always realize that horses will even do this. And one of my favorite shows on TV is Funniest Home Videos. And, of course, people always perk up when there's a horse scenario. You go, oh, this is going to be good. And I watched one here not too long ago, and a woman had the horse tied to a something that it shouldn't have been tied to. It was a wide board across a wooden, probably a stall or something like that. The horse was tied to it, had it saddled, and then she reached around the board to the other side, and the horse's head was right by the horse's eye. The horse's head was a little bit forward, and you could see she reached around, kind of reached up over that board and grabbed the bridle, and lifted it off and started dragging it across that board. Well, that horse saw it. The horse was standing there, came back, pulled back, popped that board off, knocked her onto the ground from that board, and, you know, the video couldn't see it, but where'd it go? And she stood up and said, "Wow, what happened?" See, she didn't even understand what she did that triggered that pattern of behavior. And even, you know, my husband Mark was watching it, and he said, "Why did that horse pull back?" And we replayed it, you know, because we TiVo things. And you can see where, you know, that all kind of set up. But this is the thing with horses in life in general. We get good judgment by surviving or bad judgment. And what I observed in even watching that scenario is that the person doesn't even have the opportunity to understand how that set up to happen and how to prevent it again. So that's why I'm so committed to doing what I'm doing, putting videos out there. But I can only offer the information, you know, and that's why when people come along and they say, "Oh, you helped me so much." And that's what I can do, is I can help it, but they did the hard work. So I always, you know, reply with a compliment and say, you know, "You did the hard work. I wasn't the one out there with that horse and going, okay, you know, let's figure this out and help that horse, you know, have a better life." And that's ultimately what we're doing, is we're helping our horses have a better life in our human environment. So.
Okay. Well, Karen, I think we've got time for one more here, and I know she's listening. And this one's from Mary. It says, "I spoke with you about a year ago. I was wanting to come to your clinic, and I was unable to attend. I was even more impressed with you when listening to some of your small videos that are on your website. One of the things I'm very interested in is coming this year to audit your clinic at Anderson Acres. I don't think I'll be able to bring my horse, but do you allow auditing? Also, a question about my horse. She is 17 years old, mare, left brain introvert, at least I think so, although she has become more friendly over the last couple years. I think she realizes that folks aren't really out to get her. I was starting to ride her and decided both she and I needed some lessons. She wasn't really bad, just very bracy when I wanted her to go a certain way. I'm not a trainer, so I wasn't sure the best way to get around the problem. Because there was real no natural horsemanship, folks, I decided I would go with someone who I heard was pretty good. I don't know if horses and some folks just don't mix, but ever since I've had her in training, only about 5 or 6 lessons rides with the person, she seems more flighty. She used to sidestep when she spooked, and I could stay on her. Now she bolts, and I've come off of her 4 times. Can a green rider really train and earn the trust of a green broke horse and have a wonderful relationship? She's a kind mare and has never kicked, bucked, reared, or charged. I love her, but sometimes wonder if we will ever really make it. Any insight would be helpful. Mary."
Well, you've heard from my other answers that you know, what you're looking at is pattern of behavior. You know, any horse can bolt. Any, you know, dog can bite. I mean, there's, you know, any of those things can happen. The question is developing your skill and ability. And this is something that I kind of get a little bit of a question in my mind when I, you know, hear people say, "Well, I want to come to your clinic." And, you know, whether you bring a horse or not, you know, I want to come to the clinic. So, you know, my question is why wait for the clinic? You know, don't wait for the clinic. You have too much at risk. Don't wait for the clinic. Get online and order those DVDs right now. You know, this isn't, you know, this is the era of infomercials. You know, and there's so much garbage on there, and I'm like, you know, where's the importance? I mean, who cares about wrinkle creams and, you know, exercise and PXID? I was like, you know, where's the survival, you know, system for this wonderful hobby of horses that we have? And, you know, and like anybody who knows me knows, I'm not a salesperson, but if I don't tell you, it's urgent. It's urgent to get your skill set up. So change that green rider to a more experienced rider as quickly as possible. And you have a horse that has a pattern of behavior that needs you to accelerate your, advance your skills, you know, more so than the person who has, you know, Tony the Pony that's, you know, just walking down the lane, you know, every Sunday or something like that, you know. But that's not really true either. You know, I've had people say, oh, well, my horse is fine. What do I need to learn more about, you know. And it's kind of true, but, you know, any horse, Tony the Pony can take off and bolt. So I was almost in a very serious accident on a little Tony the Pony that I rode for some friends who were looking for a kid's horse. And I saw what this horse was doing was setting up to run me through a fence, and I just stepped off because he'd never been asked to do anything outside of just his little take the grandkids around the yard thing. But when I started asking him, and he was fine if that's what I was going to do, but when I started asking him to do other things, Tony the Pony was going, listen, I got a program, and I'm going to get you back to it. That's just pattern of behavior. Can't fault the horse. But I stepped off the horse, and the neighbor came along and said, oh, that horse is fine. And I said, well, it's not fine for the people I'm looking for. They're very new and very inexperienced. And the person ended up getting on the horse, and that horse took that person, it wasn't on the first lap, but on the second lap, took that person right through the fence, took out the fence, and jumped a ditch, and the person's in the heap. And I went, oh, my gosh, you know, I'm not making this stuff up. But here's the answer, is do everything that you possibly can to advance your skills as quickly as possible. Here's the other thing. There's not enough things. When I ride a horse, I do not get on that horse's back without stinky pants on, whether that's English riding pants with full feet, leather or suede, or when I'm riding in jeans, riding on my Western saddle, I put leather leggings on, chink or long champ. The saddle needs to be leather, not synthetic. It or fabric or bareback at that stage. And also I love riding English. I love riding dressage. But for horses that have behaviors, you know, jumping around like a marlin, I'll tell you what, I want the structure of a Western saddle. And also there's a, on my website, there's a thing called a, oh my gosh, my brain went blank, security strap. And that's a strap that stays raised on the pommel, and you put your hand under it, and it's raised all the time. So it has an advantage over just a regular strap or dog collar. You know, it's a night latch is a common term for that. It stays raised all the time so that you don't even, because when a horse bolts, you don't, or bucks or anything, you don't have time to get your hand underneath that sometimes. So when I came across this person who designed it, boy, right away when I saw it, I bought all of them he had right then and there and decided to offer them on my website. So there's everything that's on my website, whether it's, you know, tools, knowledge, support, any of those things. So DVDs, little video snippets, you know, the downloads of these teleseminars, all of these things are to give people a piece of information that's going to fit into that their particular dynamic with that horse. So, you know, wearing gear that sticky pants, you know, all those kinds of things, all the time. Not just, oh, well, you know, I don't need it right now. A lot of times people think that, you know, shafts and chinks are to protect you from riding in brushy country. That's part of what they do. The majority, to me, the more important part of it is the leather on leather is the ideal sticky. It has a stickiness to it or a tack to it. You know, but leather on leather won't get gluey. I don't like synthetic material. I don't like rubbery material because that has too much stick to it. And if you need to bail off or get out of there or something like that, sometimes you can get stuck. I don't like rubber on the bottom of my boots. I don't like leather seats in my English riding gear. So leather on the bottom of the boots, leather lines in your stirrups is better than rubber. So there's an extensive amount of information around just being on top of your horse. But behaviorally, teaching that horse to take the hindquarters away. And in all of these behaviors, whether it's bucking or rearing or the horse bolting, things like that, the engine of the horse is in the hindquarters. So when you see my DVDs, you see the emphasis on the ground and translated into the saddle of taking the hindquarters away. That's your emergency brake. So there are times with, you know, my horses, they start making a decision going, hey, we need to be somewhere else. And it's just automatic. And the you know, some horses, if they just get a jump on you, you're too late. And all of a sudden, you're on a runaway train. So to do those things before the condition sets them up to bolt gives you a better chance to be able to access that on your end and their end. You know, it's like, you know, the first thing somebody should teach you snow skiing is how to stop the darn thing. You know, but if you're like me, you go up and go, oh, it looks easy. Look at all those people coming down the hill, and off you go. So, you know, when you have a situation, when you have a behavior like that, don't wait. You know, get your information, get your tools, you know, really invest in yourself. And, you know, it's kind of a funny thing. You know, I've had people say, well, Karen, you know, I have all your stuff. You know, you got to come out with some new stuff just so you, you know, that kind of thing. I go, well, if you have what you need, why do you have to, you know, keep buying more stuff? If you, and we find this in anything, when you get the right equipment and you get the right knowledge and you get the thing that really makes a difference for you, you find it's actually cheaper because you have what you need and you don't have to keep, you know, searching and looking for the gadget and the gadget and, you know, the kinds of things that are going to help you. It's the real help, you know, that you need. But it's a combination of those things too. So that's probably my recommendation, is get your skill set up, you know, faster. And but at the same time, it's not worth, no horse is worth a harm to a human being. So, you know, my recommendation is also, if somebody has a pattern of behavior with a horse and they don't feel confident doing that, you know, you can get another horse that has more experience and is more solid so that you can develop your skill and ability, okay? At the same time, getting the communication and the trust to a higher level with the other horse. And one day, you know, your skill and ability that got so much more advanced on the more confident horse will translate to that horse that needs you to be the skilled, confident leader, you know, for their particular situation as well. So, you know, generally speaking, you know, there's a term of one of my mentors, green on green makes black on blue, you know. And in hindsight, you know, as a green rider years and years ago, I had all the wrong horses. You know, and people would say, oh, I can look back, oh, my horses taught me so much. Well, yeah, they taught me so much. But, boy, I, you know, was picking myself up off the ground and dusting myself off and going, man, I'm, you know, am I all in one piece, you know? So the less skill and ability we have, and another one of my colleagues I was talking with about this very subject here a few weeks ago, because he has some wonderful horses that he has for sale, and people come along, and he has, you know, years invested in these horses. And people come along and go, well, I don't want to spend more than $1,000. It's like, well, you're going to get a $1,000 horse and then spend another $5,000 getting it to the level that you need it to be. And what he's done is he's taken these horses and invested the time and is asking, you know, a fair price for these horses. But so many times what we do is we try to save the money on this horse. And a lot of times it's first-time horse owners or not even that. And people will say, well, maybe I don't know if I want to spend the money on the horse because, you know, I don't know if I'm going to stay into it. That's the money you should be putting towards the horse so that you do make sure you stay in this hobby, make your hobby more enjoyable. But a lot of times what we don't invest in, we don't think to invest, and I know I certainly didn't in the beginning, is you to pay for that, to pay for that horse's experiences and mind and how it's been cultivated and developed so that that horse can give me the confidence in the riding. I can start developing my skill set without, you know, thinking, oh, this horse is going to bolt or buck or, you know, fill in the blank. So that's another area of education in the horse industry, is the less ability you have, the more ability the horse should have. So is it possible? Yes, absolutely it is. But you may go through a period, you know, especially coming off as many times as you have, you may go through a period where you go, I don't know how I'm going to relax and turn loose and get in rhythm with the horse, because this horse can hit, you know, Mach 10. You've felt it. You've been there, done that. So it, you may be on a path where, if that's the path you want to take, you may consider getting a more confident horse for that interim period. It may not be the horse you have forever or anything, but, you know, find a horse that, you know, maybe somebody, you know, is going into a higher level of competition and has a really nice horse, but just isn't going to compete at that level, you know, but has a lot of experience and a good mind. And that may be a horse that helps you develop your skill set faster. So that's really, in many of these questions, it always goes back to us. How do we develop our skill set to the level that horse needs us to be at? And that's where the, you know, videos are the easiest to access right then and there. There's lots of things on my website. If folks haven't looked on my website, there's lots of little video snippets. There's lots of teleseminars that have been recorded, you know, and it's just there for free. I've had people say, oh, well, you have to, you know, charge a club membership to access all these things. And I don't agree with that. But I can only offer it. It's what you do with it that counts for you and your horse.
Okay. Karen, the new DVDs that are out, are they on your website yet, ready to order, or will they be coming soon?
You know what? They're not even on the website yet.
Okay.
What you can do is call the 800 number or send an email and say you want the DVD. I talked about the Pullback, Neil Shy. Like I said, there's six different titles, and you can, you know, contact us, and we'll get that in. But I'm really excited about it. It's just the titles that we have right now are Pace Worming, If a Horse Has Trouble with Pace Worming, Needle Shy, Kicking, Bee Spooking, Clipping, and Pulling Back. And
what was the last one, Karen?
Pulling Back.
Pulling Back, okay.
Yep, your favorite topic.
So, you know, I can help people on teleseminars, you know, in a 10-15 minute answer, but actually seeing it, you know, seeing the horse, and there's different horses on this. These aren't my horses or anything. These are horses that in my travels, excuse me, I would come across and somebody would say, oh, well, we've got a horse here that does this. And I go, you know, can we videotape it? And they look at me and go, are you serious? And I said, yeah. And so on the videos, you'll see different horses doing those different things. And so you'll see the similarity in the technique and the same application of the technique, but the horses' behaviors are unique. So you see lots of different, you know, several different examples of the behavior, and you'll see the consistency in my approach, but the adjustment to how the horse responds. So there's more titles coming out that you can imagine. This has been many years of work capturing these horses and editing and, you know, capturing all these on video. But I'm very excited about this because it's not just, oh, yeah, well, here's what you do. You know, you can actually, you know, see what you do. And these behaviors are extreme. These aren't mild ones. These are, you know, facilities, overnight facilities, or, you know, at a clinic or something like that, where people said this horse has had this problem its whole life. So I didn't pick easy horses. I found, you know, the horses that had the reputation in town for being just, you know, that's how it is, and then showing people what to do, and you can see the huge improvement, you know, on the DVD right in front of your eyes. And more importantly, it's like with the trail loading video, you know, once you know what to do, I'm really looking forward to getting the feedback from people going, oh, my gosh, you know, I can't believe that this change happened so quickly. So you'll start seeing these out in tack and feed stores. We have distributors, a couple of distributors that are putting it out there right now. So my goal is to have this set of problem-solving series at the counter. So when people are getting their feed for the week or whatever, they look up and go, man, it's just right there. Don't have to, you know, figure out how to get some help, because so many times we just think there isn't any help. This is just what this horse does. So I'm really looking forward to helping people that way.
Okay. Well, great. That's exciting. Those are coming out, and I'll have to let Elisa know there's more of Karen.
More videos. Mike will be glad.
Yeah.
It's memorized. Oh, man.
He's like, oh, there's that Karen's voice again. Well, listen, we appreciate you joining us tonight, Karen, and thanks for spending time and answering these questions. We want to thank everybody for submitting their questions and tuning in tonight. Karen, do you have anything last moment you want to say before we go for the evening?
No, I'm just sorry I had the time change deal. See, we don't change time in Arizona, so, you know, it's kind of a funny adjustment sometimes. So I appreciate everybody being so patient and waiting until I realized I was late for my own party.
Yeah, that's okay. I entertained them a little bit and told them a little bit about how we met. So
that's great.
They got
that's
a little
great,
insight
Melinda.
There. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, everybody, thanks for joining us. And Karen, we'll talk to you next month then at 8:00.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Thanks, everybody.
Good night, everybody. Bye-bye.